back to Two Way Talk on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. I'm Anthony McCarthy. Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford is the 9th Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Maryland. He was elected to office with Governor Larry Hogan in 2014 and reelected in 2018. He joins us monthly on Two-Way Talk for Conversations. Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford, welcome back to Two-Way Talk.
Oh, thank you, Anthony. How are you?
Doing well. It's always great to talk to you. Now, the last time you were on, I distinctly remember at the end, you started talking about Augusta Fells, a savage. And we ran out of time. I want you to finish that thought and tell me what you think about it.
Well, you know, it's a really sad situation because of what they've been doing to those kids.
Yeah.
You know, when you, and this has been happening for a long time.
That's
I can
right.
remember, you know, some 16 years ago when I was working for Governor Ehrlich and Nancy Grasmick, who was the superintendent at that time, wanted to take over a number of the schools in Baltimore because the kids were not passing the proficiency exam. And it was all politics that stopped that. And, you know, we're seeing the same situation now where kids are not passing exams. They're really not getting that high school education, that K through 12 education. And then they are still passed along and they graduate. And Augusta Fells, fortunately, you know, folks came forward and pointed out that the young man in particular that met, you know, was on the news, or at least his family was, his mother, you know, had spent, what, 4 years in the school and was still essentially a ninth grader. You know, she's expecting he's going to graduate, and the school at least called her and said, hey, no, he's not. He has not passed a class. He has less than a one-point grade point average. And he was in the middle of the class.
In the middle of the class.
So, I mean, it's so sad that you have to chuckle, because it is really unbelievable what they were doing and have been doing to the kid. And so there are other kids who do get passed along that believe that they and their families are, you know, cheering and all that, and believe that they are competitive with other kids graduating from high school in all parts of the state or all parts of the country. And they really aren't, unfortunately. So whether they do, just like your previous person on the line, they get frustrated, they get angry, and they think the system is against them. But the system that they were dealing with failed them. You know, that particular school failed them. There are other schools that are failing kids, too. Now, they're good schools or schools that are doing good work in Baltimore City, but we do hear a lot about both actual and anecdotal, you know, evidence with regard to some challenges that are going on in the schools. And it's really, really a problem. And we're not going to address a lot of the issues in Baltimore City until we get the schools straight.
You are so right. And it would be funny. I was just watching. I remember watching that Fox report. And that young man was just, he was speaking truth. And I was laughing, but it was really sad. It was really tragic.
It is tragic.
Now, there
you know, and kids don't know any better.
They don't know any better. No, they're going to take.
They don't know what they don't know. And so they're thinking, you know, if you're going to let me get away with this in the ninth grade, and then you let me get away with it in what I think I'm in the 10th grade, I'm going to continue to just, you know, have fun and live day to day. They don't realize that they're sinking further and further back. And it's going to be, you know, a challenge, you know, for the rest of their life, unless they are able to really, you know, suck it up and work real hard and kind of pick up things that they probably didn't pick up in middle school. You know, I went to a middle school a couple of years ago in Baltimore. I'm not going to say what school it was. It was a new principal there. And she told me that the kids coming in the second grade, or sixth grade, excuse me, were on average 2 years behind. And some of them were 3 years behind. And I was like, well, you know, I would get fired if I was the principal. Because I would tell the elementary school, the feeder elementary school, and the high school that I'm supposed to feed into, to say, you're not getting any kids next year. And I'm not taking any more kids next year because these kids need to stay here another year. Whatever grade they're in, they're going to stay there another year. Because how do you catch up?
Yeah, how in the world could you possibly catch up?
Particularly in the, you know, in the school with the regular school year, you know, or are you going to require every kid to go to summer school? And then that becomes a parent, you know, question, you know, parent issue and burden. So, you know, there are a lot of challenges, and, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm just observing. And I do know, as, you know, as an adult who's been through school and raised kids who've gone through school, of, you know, what you need to do. And when you know something is failing, you got to change it.
Now, there was a principal, a former principal, who spoke out recently, and it was another Fox 45 report. And what she revealed to us was what was going on at Augusta Fells Savage was not unusual. It was going on in the school that she was in, and it was going on in a lot of other schools. What can we do to ring the bell, Lieutenant Governor, to really make the schools a priority? Do you think the mayor, the council, do you think enough people are engaging the school system to really start to turn this huge ship around?
I think they need to. It doesn't, and I'm going to be frank with you, it doesn't appear that the elected leaders in the city are taking the schools serious enough. They want to, in, you know, when questioned, defend the indefensible, you know, blame the messenger, you know, be it Fox 45, be it somebody else. Now, I will say that I also will point to the other media outlets. They don't seem to be, you know, concerned about this either. And I don't know if they're afraid that they're not going to be invited to the right cocktail party or receptions or not going to get whatever the case may be. But they're not, you know, pointing to this either. This is a tragedy. And, you know, all the crime reports, the if it bleeds, it leads, they report on that every day. But this is what leads to the crime. This is why we have the crime, because we've had generations of undereducated kids that don't have any place to go. So we need to, I've said it before, you need an elected school board. That's one, because it doesn't seem like the council really wants to. I know the council doesn't have a lot of authority, but they don't want to shine a light to it. They can have hearings. They can shine a light on the problem. They don't. You know, they may not be able to remove personnel, or they also have some budget authority. You know, most of the money comes from the state, but the city does provide money as well. You know, and they can exercise their oversight authority. But an elected school board would be directly responsible.
That's right.
You know, so, I mean, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But it almost makes you want to say the whole thing needs to be broken up and start all over.
Start all over from scratch.
Or at least give maybe all the schools that are open, the same flexibility that the charter schools have. Because many of the charters are doing real well.
Are doing well. Yeah. So I want to ask you, and I know my callers are probably going crazy because I'm talking about the schools, and now I'm going to ask you about crime in the city. We are about to, in just a few months, most likely reach that milestone of 300 homicides in the city. Baltimore.
I'll tell us if they have it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, Baltimore City, Baltimore County is having a surge of crime.
Yeah, what? Prince George's too.
Yeah, Prince George's. Even Montgomery County is having some surge in crime. What can we do? And I know it's anecdotal because police cannot cut the crime. It's a cultural thing where
there's a cultural issue.
So give me your thoughts on it.
No, you're right. There is a cultural issue, and particularly when it comes to the murder rate and murders, you know, it's a loss of respect for life. You know, that they don't see it as sacred. They don't see it as affecting more than that one person that they're angry with or did whatever the challenge is that they had, that they felt they need to shoot this person or stab this person or beat them to death, that they don't see consequences for themselves, and they don't see the people who are left behind. And so, yeah, that's a moral issue. And, you know, I go back to the schools. We also have to, you know, there are a lot of families that are really dysfunctional and are not really setting boundaries with kids, and they grow up without boundaries, without discipline. You know, like the young lady talked about, and I remember working in a rec center many, many years ago, and a kid would do something, you know, and they want to fight, they want to do whatever. And you say something to the young person, they say, well, but he made me mad. Okay, so that's your reason for wanting to pick up a brick and hitting them in the head with it? You know, versus, I mean, and it's, he made me mad. For what? You know, and usually it's something that was said, something that was not said. You know, what we had was 2 years ago that some guy goes up to Douglas and
that's right,
the person in the hall because the sister was made upset.
She was upset
because the guy said something to her about something that she wasn't doing right. He tried to correct her, and she got upset, went home, and her uncle or whatever comes up to the school and shoots the guy. And it's like, what in the world is going on there?
How in the world do we reach that point in our society? I just don't understand.
It's a breakdown in the family. It's a breakdown in the home. You know, whatever that home is, it's a breakdown. It's where, again, there wasn't any dealing with, you know, young people, kids, babies, whatever, with their anger and their frustration. You know, I'm quite sure your mother didn't let you do go into a tantrum.
Oh, no. And if I did, she ended it very quickly.
Exactly. You know, I've said often, you know, you either learn to discipline yourself or someone else will discipline
you. Or someone else will do it.
Right. And it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, we've had, you know, two presidents in my lifetime were impeached.
Yep.
Because they couldn't discipline themselves.
So tell us, Lieutenant Governor, you have really been an active Lieutenant Governor, including Maryland's response to the addiction epidemic. Tell us why it's been a priority for you.
Well, you know, it started, I mean, we at least saw how, I'm sorry, just, we're driving and somebody
that's okay. No.
did something there.
That's all right, Lieutenant Governor.
Fortunately, I'm not driving. Someone did something that where they weren't looking and was kind of, be careful in parking lots.
Folks of course.
Listening at home, be careful in parking lots. When we were first campaigning back in 2014, and, you know, you travel around the state, you talk to people, you go into little municipalities on the Eastern Shore, Western Maryland, the counties, and you talk to some of the local officials, and, you know, you run into the local sheriff or whatever, and you're saying, hey, what are the biggest issues that you're confronting? And this is back in 2013, 2014, and we were hearing consistently heroin. Heroin was the biggest issue. And we were in Hurlock in Dorchester County. Hurlock is probably maybe 1,000 people live in Hurlock, you know? And the guy, the local police chief, maybe, I think maybe 1,500. The local police chief said that he had been a cop in Baltimore City in the 90s. And he said the heroin there is worse than what the crack epidemic in the 90s. That was his view of what was happening in Hurlock. We heard the same thing in Frederick County. You know, Baltimore has had a heroin issue since I was a boy, so we knew about that, but didn't know that it was greater than what it had been since, you know, the 1970s, early, you know, 70s, late 60s. And so, you know, the governor and I, you know, were saying, you know, we're going to have to do something about this because it's only growing. And so he asked me to chair a task force when we first came in. And, you know, for the 7 years, we've been working on this issue. And we saw some progress in terms of the overdose levels going down in 2019, first time in about 10 years. And then they went up. You know, 2020 happened.
Mm-hmm.
2020, you know, COVID happened. A lot of people, you know, fell off their recovery. And you know, people do fall off recovery. Recovery mm-hmm. works, but sometimes people fall off and they have to come back. But unfortunately, people fell off. And in the last several years, fentanyl has really overtaken the mixtures. You know, people, over 90-some-odd percent of overdoses are fentanyl-related. And the number one combination with fentanyl is not heroin anymore. It's cocaine.
Hmm.
So you got folks out there thinking that they're doing cocaine and they're going to be safe, and they're getting fentanyl. And they're bootleg, you know, prescription drugs that can look like Percocet or look like something else that people are buying on the street,
mm-hmm.
which is really mostly fentanyl or partially fentanyl that were made in some lab in China or in Mexico. That's where the two places they're mostly coming from.
That's horrible.
A bootleg lab, I should say, not a pharmaceutical
That's
quality.
Right. And you don't need a lot of fentanyl. Just a couple of grains of fentanyl
will kill you. Yeah, a couple of grains of pure fentanyl will kill you.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So, so that's been an issue. And combining that with mental health,
mm-hmm.
I've been particularly concerned about, you know, mental health and how we address that. And there is a correlation between severe drug use and abuse and mental health. You know, I don't know if it's, you know, it's kind of a chicken and egg. It's, person has mental health issues and they're trying to self-medicate, or through using drugs for a period of time, it starts to affect their mental health. But in many cases, it's an undiagnosed mental health issue that they also are having a substance use disorder challenge as well.
So now the mayor of Baltimore is mandating that student athletes be vaccinated, that they have to take the vaccine to participate in sports. Is this something that we should be considering in every school in Maryland?
Well, I'm not crazy about statewide
mandates.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I think local officials should make that decision based on what is happening in their local, you know, communities.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as with schools, they can be held directly accountable to those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't go as far as mandating it for every school system. A number of counties have taken similar approaches, and I think that's just a way to encourage young people, you know, who are now able, the 12 and above, to get vaccinated. But we're doing a good job statewide. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's somewhere around 68% or 70% of 12 and above who are already fully vaccinated. Actually, it's higher than that when you go, because it's 84% of 18-year-olds and above have gotten at least one vaccine.
Mm.
And it's somewhere around it goes to about 80% when it's 12 and above
mm-hmm.
have gotten at least one vaccine. Somewhere around 70% of the 12 to 17-year-olds have at least one vaccine. So the young people are getting it, and it's the parents who got them. I mean, 84%, almost 85%
mm-hmm.
of 18 and above have had at least one vaccine. So those folks are more likely to have their, you know, get their teenage children vaccinated as well. You know, one of the things, and this is a good, I'm glad you brought that up in terms of just vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
One of the misconceptions that's out there, and I think the federal government did a very poor job in explaining the vaccines and where they came from. You know, a lot of people, particularly early on, said, oh, I'm not going to take that. It's too quick. It took them, they didn't take enough time to do
research.
That's
right.
And blah, blah, blah. The mRNA which is the foundation for the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, that process, that protein separator, was found some 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And we just had 20 years since 2001, since 9/11. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, after 9/11, and when the anthrax was taking place,
mm-hmm.
the federal government at the time decided, the Bush administration said, we need to, you know, look into first an anthrax antidote. And so they did a lot of research, and what came out of that research was initially an Ebola vaccine. And that Ebola vaccine, using this mRNA technology, is what became the foundation for the vaccines that we're using now from Moderna and Pfizer. So the research had started many years ago to separate these viruses and understand how to address the virus and how, you know, to, in the body, create certain proteins and antibodies that are going to address these issues and build the immunity within our systems, make our bodies work to fight off the virus.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I probably did a terrible job. So there's some biologist or chemist out there or researcher that's probably said, he just blew that whole
explanation. I think you did well.
But it's something that I think the federal government should have done when they were talking about it. I know, look, politicians say, oh, yeah, we did this, blah, 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 and mm-hmm. they don't want to explain. And there are a lot of people who don't want the explanation. And there are going to be people who don't believe it because there's
of
conspiracy
course.
Theorists
mm-hmm.
and folks that they believe the moon landing was a mistake. I know you remember all that stuff.
I do.
Right? And the people say, oh, no, that was done in the Hollywood studio. There's nobody up there. But, you know, so I just think if that had been explained a lot better, we may not have had some of the resistance that we had early on and still have.
Mm. So how are we doing in Maryland? We look at the other states and people are just really trying to see that these spreading, these rise in their COVID metrics. How are we doing in Maryland?
We're doing well, and we're doing better than a lot of states because our vaccination rates are so high. I mean, people are still getting infected, but, you know, and even, you know, having the vaccine. The vaccines were projected at the time that they were approved at to be about 94% to 95% effective.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant about 5% to 6% of people who get the vaccine still could get COVID. The difference is you're less likely to get severe ailments that are going to put you in the hospital and later die. And we're still, even with those who have been vaccinated compared to the people who've been vaccinated and have gotten COVID, is far less than that. Or, you know, 5% or 6%, it's closer to 0.5% of the people in Maryland. So we've been doing well with that. We still have, you know, a number of people who are not vaccinated who are getting COVID. And unfortunately, the people who are vaccinated, who are either in the hospital or dying, most of them have some other underlying condition,
mm-hmm.
be it obesity. Obesity is, that and diabetes are probably the biggest threats. I mean, cancer patients also, because their immune system is down, transplant patients. But obesity is something that we really can address ourselves. And that is something that is really, because the virus attacks weaknesses in your system.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that we have to be very careful about. But we as a state are doing fairly well, and it's thanks to the majority of our population who are taking it very seriously and are getting their vaccines. And that's why we were able to, you know, open up the state, you know,
yeah.
let people live, crying mm-hmm. out loud. Yeah, so.
So we're running out of time. I do want to ask you about the budget surplus, and that you and the governor have made a commitment about rainy day relief. Can you tell us about that real quick?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, you know, the projections that were made with regard to revenue coming into the state were wrong. They were wrong in a very positive way in terms of the, you know, tax revenue, both income tax, sales tax, you know, fees. They were all greater than what was anticipated. And a lot of that is due to the fact that, you know, we acted early with regard to COVID, but we didn't shut down the entire economy, which some states did. And so that, you know, people were still, many people were still working. Construction worked throughout the whole time. I would say we have a demographic in our state. We have a lot of federal workers who did not lose a paycheck. So they were still working. We had a lot of remote workers that were still working. Now, the hospitality industry, of course, got hammered.
Took a beating. The whole thing. Yeah.
You know, the hotels, the restaurants, the convention business, all of that got just, you know, hammered throughout the pandemic. But the majority of our economy was working. So people were at home ordering off of Amazon and, you know, and the FedEx trucks running up and down the street, dropping stuff off. And so that's tax revenue that's going on. And, you know, and people were still working and they weren't spending as much. And so they, you know, it just, we're in a better situation. Now, what we have said is that some people forget that the money that the government gets, it gets from the people. It's, you know,
Lieutenant Governor, I'm sorry.
You voluntarily provide it or we take it from you.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm getting the signal that we've got to go. Okay. I love our monthly chats. I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay.
All right, brother. Take care. Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford, thank you so very much. Folks, we got to get out of here. Two-Way Talk is heard Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. on WEAA 88.9 FM on the campus of Morgan State University. Our producer is Justina Pollard. Our engineer is Sean McBean. Stay tuned for the Morgan News Hour. Join us again tomorrow at 4 p.m. Good night.